This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. West Virginia's Revenue Secretary Dave Hardy announced yesterday the state's bond rating had been downgraded by the third rating agency since April of 2016. Moody's joined Standard & Poor's and Fitch in downgrading the state from AA1 to AA2. Ashton Mara reports.
This just makes me sick. I mean, that's just all there is to it.
Governor Jim Justice joined Revenue Secretary Dave Hardy at a press conference at the Capitol Tuesday to announce the bond downgrade. Hardy explained while the change in rating isn't drastic, it does impact $392 million in outstanding state debt and will affect any bond proposals the state puts forward in the future. In April and then September of 2016, the two other major national rating agencies, Standard & Poor's and Fitch, downgraded West Virginia based on budgetary issues and the state's lagging economy. At the time, Moody's put West Virginia on watch, Hardy explained, but made the decision to downgrade Tuesday morning.
The downgrade reflects, according to Moody's, a multi-year trend of growing structural imbalance between the annual expenditures and available resources in our state's budget.
That means the state is spending more money than it's bringing in, leaving a budget gap lawmakers have had to fill over the past several sessions. This year, the governor's office estimates that hole is nearly $500 million and will continue to grow without a solution.
We've been years and we won't react. All we want to do is kick a can down the road and we won't react and we won't do. And now we are where we are. And it's just going to get worse. It's not going to get better. It's just going to get worse if we don't act and we don't do something.
Justice wants to raise taxes to fix the imbalance, but Republican leaders so far are largely against his proposals. They'd rather rely on substantial cuts to government and refinancing the state's pension debt or lowering the current payment, but extending the length of the debt far into the future. It's that proposal, though, that Justice says contributed to the Moody's decision.
That's one of the big things that Moody's said. If you do that, you're even more unstable. If you don't make current liabilities, if you don't make current annual payments, you are more unstable.
Aside from refinancing pension debt and the state's massive budget hole, Moody's says West Virginia will also continue to be downgraded if it doesn't find a way to create long-term growth and diversify its economy. In a written statement Tuesday evening, House Speaker Tim Armstead said the downgrade, quote, reinforces the need for fundamental changes to the operation of state government, end quote. He will continue to support proposals to restructure the state's tax code and, quote, right-size government, or make additional cuts. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara at the State House.
Rural Appalachia has some of the highest cancer mortality rates in the country, up to 36% higher than what is seen elsewhere. The culprit? That's a multifold answer. Carol Lofton talked about cancer rates in Appalachia with freelance reporter Lindsay Gilpin, who wrote a story addressing the discrepancy. Data journalism website 538 published the story earlier this month.
This University of Virginia study showed that cancer incidence declined in much of the country. It looked since 1969, except for rural Appalachia. And then you have those kind of sky-high mortality rates. And it's really because of this perfect storm of unfortunate circumstances. You have a rural population with very high obesity rates, high rates of smoking, a really high poverty rate, a high unemployment rate, and then you have a lack of education. And then on top of that, you have the healthcare side of things with lack of access to preventative care and a lack of access to really good treatment in an area where there are environmental factors that are contributing to this, you know, such as pollution, contamination of soil and water, and mining. That's a little less clear, but, you know, all of those things combined really makes for this difficult situation for many people to either get care or when they do get care to trust the systems that are supposed to provide them with a way to kind of get out of this disease.
So you also write that people in much of rural Appalachia are more likely to die within 3 to 5 years of their diagnoses than those in both urban Appalachian areas and urban areas across the U.S. Why is that?
That's primarily because of this lack of access we're talking about. And even when people can get care, they have to drive farther and wait longer and perhaps not have access to the, you know, advanced clinical trials or really great healthcare systems, hospitals, things like that, that can provide them with the best kind of available resources for the best outcomes and survival rates. A big part of this, the study was looking at the reasons that people don't return for follow-up care. The University of Virginia researchers said that 15 to 20% of women who have abnormal mammograms don't return for a follow-up. And so you could see how that would contribute to the kind of the higher mortality rates and the shorter lifespan when people kind of give up in the middle of treatment or don't have access to the best places to get that treatment.
Preventative screenings are one of the best tools we have to catch cancer early. What role or access to preventative services have on cancer rates in Appalachia?
Preventative care is perhaps the biggest piece of this puzzle. From everyone I talked to, it seemed like that was the part that they're trying to fix, and it could be the most immediate fix. So a lot of the cancers we focus on were preventable cancers. So breast cancer, colon cancer, lung cancer, and cervical cancer. There's a lot of barriers to get to the point where they can access even just something as simple as a screening. So that's why these community-driven efforts to literally go to people's doors and hand them like a take-home colon cancer screening that they can do themselves and then follow up later, that has been kind of the way that these researchers have seen the most progress in kind of getting people to take their health seriously and also follow up. It really has to be kind of this one-on-one effort.
You mentioned that economic, social, and environmental factors also play a role in cancer incidence. What is going on in rural Appalachia that is different from the rest of the country, or is it, you know, just basically lifestyle?
Lifestyle is a big part of it, but the lifestyle factors have a lot to do with the economics and the social and environmental factors. So obviously this isn't new for anyone that I talked to that was living in Appalachia. You know, for years people have relied on the coal mining industry to survive, and that is slowing down. In late 2016, there were only 3,600 coal mining jobs left in eastern Kentucky, and there's nothing to replace it, so the employment rate is really high. So that, you know, that's the story that we kind of always hear about, the poverty and the decline of coal and trying to figure out what comes next for Appalachia's economy. And that has a very real effect on specific healthcare outcomes.
I mean, you know, talking about coal, Appalachia is well known as a hub for commercial coal production, but coal production has been tied to chemicals in the water supply, for instance, and loosely tied to cancer incidence. Is coal mining causing higher cancer rates in Appalachia? Can we draw that line?
It's not as clear as that. We can't draw the direct connection between coal pollution and cancer. You know, almost everyone I spoke to that was living in eastern Kentucky talked about the fact that they were leery of, you know, water contamination and its relationship with cancer or other chronic illnesses. But, you know, that's anecdotally. When you look at the research, there's not enough to prove that link. There is research that shows mortality rates and chronic illnesses are higher in coal-producing counties. You know, one study comparing two West Virginia counties showed that cancer rates were 5 percentage points higher in the county with surface mining than in the county that did not have surface mining. So several researchers I spoke to said that, you know, really more long-term studies on kind of this generational issue with cancer are needed to kind of figure out this link and to better understand really what are the direct effects of carcinogens in the water and in the soil on people. But it may be harder to kind of draw those conclusions as coal production slows down to understand kind of what's been happening over the past few decades.
That's freelance reporter Lindsay Gilpin talking with Kara Lofton. Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from the Benedum Foundation, WVU Medicine, and Charleston Area Medical Center. Body cameras have become more important than ever for police departments nationwide as civilians use cell phone cameras to film encounters with the police. Last year, the Morgantown community pitched in to help the Monongalia County Sheriff's Department buy new body cameras. They're being used for the first time this winter. Ann Lee has more.
Get your ball.
Sergeant Andy Pintus and his canine in training, Boomer, are out on a typical afternoon shift. It starts at 2 p.m. and lasts till 10 at night. They do the typical things like playing fetch and training.
Come on, get it, bring it back.
Pintus conducts a traffic stop.
Sir.
And then they do the more boring things like filing paperwork and cleaning out the cruiser. Throughout it all, Pintus wears a body camera that is held to his vest by a magnetic clip. Last year, the Morgantown community pitched in to help the sheriff's department buy new body cameras. Chief Deputy Al Kisner, who was sheriff last year, said they needed about $40,000 to buy new cameras for all the officers who were regularly on the road. The old ones only had a two-hour battery life, and they didn't produce good footage in low-light situations.
So what we did was we went to our county commission. They agreed to pay up to $20,000 of the purchase price, and then we were going to pay the other half. And miraculously, what happened was we had a couple of individual groups that stepped up.
One of those groups was the Morgantown chapter of the Hogs and Heroes Foundation, a national group for motorcyclists that supports soldiers, veterans, and first responders. They teamed up with an amateur radio group in Morgantown to raise about $11,000 last year for the body cameras. Lawrence Big Sarge Taylor, the president of the Morgantown chapter of Hogs and Heroes, said he read about the sheriff's department's need for body cameras in the local newspaper.
Our biggest fundraiser is what we call a helmet drive. You've probably seen fire departments, they have what they call boot drives. They just kind of hold a boot out as you drive by and hopefully you'll donate. We hold helmets out.
Taylor said Hogs and Heroes felt that body cameras would not only protect civilians, but police officers as well. Valina Beatty, a law professor at the West Virginia University College of Law, agrees. She says investment in body cameras is a practical one for police departments, especially when civilians can use their cell phones to video record their own encounters with police. She pointed out that body camera usage can also improve the relationship between police officers and the communities they serve. For example, the Charleston Police Department consulted with the American Civil Liberties Union of West Virginia before finalizing their body camera policy last year.
I know at least Charleston and here in Morgantown, the departments are being proactive about how can we have a trusting relationship with the community rather than an antagonistic one where the community fears us.
The Monongalia County Sheriff's Department has been scrutinized for its body camera policies before. Three officer-involved shootings occurred in 2015 and 2016, resulting in the deaths of three civilians. In all three cases, none of the deputies involved were wearing the old, lower-quality body cameras. Here's Kisner again.
At that time of those incidents, the deputies weren't wearing those cameras anymore because they were inadequate.
West Virginia does not have any statute pertaining specifically to body camera usage, meaning that police departments can set their own policies. The Monongalia County Sheriff's Department's policy is that all road deputies, meaning officers who respond to calls for service, must wear them and activate them when interacting with civilians. The footage is archived for 2 years and can be requested by attorneys, but isn't available directly to the public. And when the officer isn't interacting with the civilian, the cameras are in standby mode. That's because a lot of the time, officers are just driving, filing paperwork, or training their canines. But even in standby mode, the cameras are recording and temporarily saving footage. Pintus said some officers expressed hesitation about being under constant surveillance while on duty.
You know, I tell guys, do you do anything wrong? I mean, are you doing something you're not supposed to do? And they said, well, no, I'm not doing anything wrong. I said, then what are you worried about? As long as you're not doing anything wrong and you're following, you know, our guidelines and you're professional and you're respectful, so you got nothing to worry about.
Wes Matheny, an attorney in Monongalia County, donated about $900 to the cause, enough to pay for one body camera. He also pledged to buy another for every five body cameras other lawyers purchased, though no one took him up on his offer. As a personal injury lawyer, he says video evidence has played a crucial role in many of his cases.
And in fact, I've seen cases in Morgantown where people have been cleared because of video evidence and where they've been convicted because of the video evidence.
In other words, body cameras help protect both police officers and the community. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ann Lee in Morgantown.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.